Welcome back to episode 16 of To the Unknown Pod. My name is Jordan Bush. I am the executive director of TGFB Media. And today we are joined by two-thirds of the Island Boys, who I will allow to introduce themselves before I introduce our guest.
What's up, Jordan? Oshawa Hawthorne, live in Portland, Oregon with my family. Eight kids, happy dad. And I lead a small organization called Brilliance Labs.
My name is Matt Purvis, a pastor, long time in Hawaii on the Big Island, hence the name Island Boys, in the small village of Pahoa, a new age Mecca, and also run businesses and did other stuff.
And so basically that's kind of who we are. We're missing Ryan. Ryan is on a vacation with his family, which we allow him to do every so often. We just tell him not to make a habit of it. And then we go from there. Today, I just want to introduce our guests. We are super grateful to have with us Matthew Mastronardi, who will kind of unpack why he's here and what that is. But Matthew, for those maybe who don't know, you don't need to mention kind of your recent scandal, let's say. But just why don't you give a background to folks who don't know you, and then kind of give us your Bitcoin bona fides maybe. Including who you just interviewed a couple days ago.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Jordan. It's good to be with you all. Yeah, my name is Matthew Mastronardi. I live in Spokane, Washington, and I'm a former teacher, and we'll get into that. Why I'm a former teacher. But yeah, I've been into Bitcoin for about 4 years now and lead a little organization here called Pacific Northwest Bitcoin. We teach free classes along with my brother, who you got to meet up in Moscow, Idaho.
Nope.
And I also have a podcast called The Great Reassessment. And the episode you're referring to is my episode with Jeff Booth. And it was really cool. I had to wait a long time because he's a very busy man. But my mind was nonetheless, blown away just being able to talk to him. It's really cool. And so, yeah, I've been into Bitcoin and... yeah, I have family in Argentina, and that country has, suffered monetary oppression. And, you wake up one morning, the banks are closed. And so I kind of understand the symptoms of bad money from that perspective a little bit. And yeah, it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah. And so again, so Matthew, we have that in common. Obviously, I spent about 7 years in Uruguay, which is just across the river from Argentina. And just culturally, those two places are super similar. They're cousins in a lot of ways. So even just looking at you, my heart just like wells because I just miss being in Uruguay and miss our friends and the culture there and everything. So, we'll get into this a little bit. Why don't you kind of unpack for us? Obviously you said that you were a teacher. Why don't you kind of start unpacking what the situation was that arose and how that affected you?
Yeah. So I was a high school Spanish teacher in the public school system. And on April 17th, it was during sixth period, there was an incident that occurred that eventually got me fired. But I had taught my Spanish lesson and I was pacing around the room and students are working on an independent assignment. And I overhear this conversation between two girls, and they're talking about the book To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a book that they're assigned to read in their English class. I want to be clear, I don't actually teach that book. But They were talking about how they have to skip over, I'm not going to say the word here, but they have to skip over a word called the N-word. And I was just thinking that's weird because you're assigned to read this book and, as a Christian, we respect authorial intent, especially when we're reading the Bible, right? And we should do the same thing when we're reading novels. We really miss an opportunity to understand the context. I mean, to confront history head on. And we have to understand the difference between context and intent. And I just expressed my disagreement with these girls that they have to do that. And it led to a really spontaneous, teachable moment that I think these kids really needed. So I kind of went off script a little bit. I wasn't planning on spending the rest of the class period talking about this, but I thought it was a worthwhile side conversation because we live in a world where we're losing context. And I thought they needed that because in a couple of years, they're going to be functional citizens. And you can't have a society that doesn't have the capability to appreciate nuance and context. Well, anyways, a girl asked me straight up, she goes, well, if you were reading the book, would you read the word? And I laughed and I said, yes, if I was reading the book, I would read every word. And in that moment, a boy whipped out the book. He had the page ready to go. And he said, here, take it. Let's see it. Do it. And I felt like I was past the point of no return. And my integrity was on the line at this point. And I felt like I had to display for these students that they can engage with literature honestly. They don't have to be afraid. They don't have to be scared of being called a racist or only be allowed to read the book on certain conditions. I think it's your duty and your right as a learner to read the text as written and without fear of consequences. And so I felt like I had to display that, and I did, and it was secretly recorded. And that video got circulated around the school. It made its way up to the school board, and I eventually, the school board voted to let me go.
Oh, man. I mean, it was crazy for me to hear this story because we had just been together. I mean, a month and a half earlier. We'd just been hanging out, and then to hear this whole thing happen. I mean, were these students, I don't know how much you want to get into this, but like, this wasn't done maliciously by this student. They just were going to get it on video. They weren't thinking like, ooh, we hate Mr. Mastronardi. We're trying to get him fired. They weren't thinking necessarily any of that, were they?
No. You know, cell phones in schools has been a really big problem. Mm. And you have to think, like, teenagers these days, they're really just fighting for validation and they want to be accepted by their peers.
Yeah.
And everything to them is an opportunity to be connected and to share it. Everything's a post, right?
Sure.
I think she just wanted to capture the juicy moment to share with her friends. And this, on my last day of school, when everybody found out what was happening, she actually apologized to me. Mm. And with tears in her eyes, and it was a great opportunity for me to say, I'm not mad at you, and I believe God is sovereign. But it was a great lesson for them to think about second and third order consequences, because sometimes they make these decisions not thinking that there could be a secondary consequence that your actions actually have effects.
So how did the school board respond? Was it just pretty much, I mean, were they willing to kind of hear you out at all, or did any of the context matter? Ironically, the context of you reading the book didn't matter. You know, the context of what you were doing, what was kind of their response?
Yeah. So it started out, the principal gave me a verbal warning, like a reprimand, saying, don't ever do this again. And I thought that was the end of it. But then 2 days later, human resources director reached out to me and she said, we want to have a conversation about your contract. Hmm. And in that meeting, I was given an ultimatum that in light of recent events, I can either voluntarily resign or face non-renewal. And I submitted a rebuttal because my conscience was clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I 2 days after that, I was served papers of non-renewal. And so I kept quiet about it because I was trying to follow due process and meet with the superintendent, try to get him to reconsider. And they ultimately decided against that. So the last week of school was when the story went viral. You know, you saw it in the New York Post, the Washington Times, the Daily Mail, libs of TikTok retweeted it, and it was just everywhere. And so it was Thursday, and the last day of school was Friday. At noon, I was served papers that I had to vacate the campus, and I didn't get to go to the last day of school and say goodbye. And my brother works at the same school. We were teachers at the same school, and he worked across the hall, and he said that the next day was really sad because students were just flocking to my room. They wanted to see me. They wanted to say goodbye. And, you know, it was just a really sad situation. But then we had a school board meeting where that was my final appeal last week, and they unanimously voted to terminate my contract. And, you know, it was crazy. We got there at 8 a.m. There was a huge crowd gathering outside the building, and we had 2 overflow rooms and an hour of public comment. And it was just really cool to see the community come together. And I'm really proud of my students for displaying courage. You know, some of these are 15, 16 year olds and making a public comment to stand up for something they believe in. And so it was just really cool. But they made their decision really quickly after the public comment. They had already made their minds up and they voted unanimously to let me go.
What do you think motivated, I mean, some of the, I mean, just the reluctance or refusal to consider your appeal? What do you kind of chalk that up to?
I think that there's secular progressive forces that govern our public school systems that they can't have a teacher who tells the truth too often. So I think they maybe thought that I was going to be a loose cannon, right? If they let me get tenure, it's going to be a lot harder to get rid of me. And I'm not afraid to speak the truth. I'm not afraid that if the student comes to me with a genuine, thought-provoking, educational question, I'm not going to slam the door in his face. And I think they saw me as a liability to where maybe he'll do this again. And that, I don't know if that's true, right? Every situation's a little different, but I think that they saw me.
You're saying you don't know if you would do it again. Like it would depend on the situation.
Yeah, it would depend on the situation. Like I said, my conscience is clean. I felt like it was an appropriate time to have a spontaneous teaching moment, which those are golden moments. Like every teacher's dreams of, hey, look, all the students have put their phones away and I have their undivided attention. They're actually listening to me. It's a teacher's dream to have that. And, you know, so every day is a little different, but, you know, I didn't wake up that morning wanting to do that. It just sort of happened. And I think it's a system that can't have too much truth telling or too much helping students think critically when it goes against their orthodoxy.
Have you had other like run-ins with like in the school at all? Or was this kind of just it was like one strike, you're out?
Yeah. I had been teaching there for 3 years. I've never had a disciplinary action before this. And to my knowledge, there's been no like formal grievances. I've had conversations with parents about their students, but like nobody's ever brought a complaint to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I passed every teaching evaluation, but this was like the first thing, and it just like an avalanche that it all sort of erupted.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned, it might've been before we got on the call, like you're married, you have 3 kids. So what is the last, you know, few weeks looked like from that standpoint, just in terms of, I mean, you still got to provide for your wife and kids. You still got to put food on the table. You know, have you been able to find another job? Or are you still kind of looking, or what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, fortunately the teachers, sign a contract. So I will, thank God, I'll still get paid for like 2 more months through the end of my contract. 'Cause my contract goes through August. And then it's terminated. But yeah, I'm looking for other opportunities. I have some entrepreneurial ideas that I'm thinking about. I'm trying to, you know, build my podcast and network and things like that. I'm really thankful that I have some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just sort of taking it one step at a time. The last month and a half has been really stressful because, you know, with all the articles and the news, you just spend a lot more time on your phone than you really want to, because you're wondering, what did the paper say, and who's leaving these comments that they're attacking me? And it creates stress in a lot of unique ways. And my wife has had to, you know, bear a brunt of this stuff. And I've been busy talking to the press and things like that. And you are just, and you have this big question mark about what's the future going to hold. Mm-hmm. And so we're relieved in a way that we have an answer so we can actually start planning and building our life again.
Sure. Yeah. So in terms of your brother, I'm sure on the one hand, I'm sure you have like mixed emotions about that, right? You got your brother who, you know, stands up for you and quits, you know, and so I'm sure you're proud of him and happy on the one hand. And at the same time, is he married as well?
Yes, he's married, has a stay-at-home wife with 3 kids as well. We both have 2 kids.
So I'm sure that has there been any like mixed emotions from your standpoint on that as well?
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, like, was this the right decision?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, he's the grown man. He's going to make his decision.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're praying that God opens new doors. And, you know, because, yeah, when you walk away from a teaching career, you know, you have a stable job, you have insurance, you have a 401k. And, you know, so we're just like, man, we hope that there's some redemption at the end of all of this that,
yeah,
you know, we can look back and say, you know, it was all for a God glorifying reason. Mm-hmm. And we're already seeing some of that just with the students. Like, I want to say how proud I am of my students because, you know, they're showing up to a press event. They're showing up to the school board meeting. And like this lesson about context that I was trying to teach, they're actually learning it in a very practical, applicable way because,
mm-hmm.
you know, before all this, maybe they hadn't thought about our words, right? But now they see their teacher losing their job. And they're actually forced to think, well, he wasn't saying it in a racist, pejorative way. He was reading it in a book. And so they're having to like weigh it. Whereas maybe if none of this had happened, you know, they would have just read the book the way the teacher wants them to. And, you know, they wouldn't have thought about context and the use and intent of our words. But now they are. And I think that it's a lesson that it's going to carry with them. And they got to hear the gospel through this. And like my pastor came to the school board meeting and he led a beautiful prayer before the event. And, you know, there's a lot of non-believers who are there. And so some of those, hey, this happened for a reason. Some of that is already starting to reveal itself, but, you know, a man has to provide. And yeah. So we're hoping that
yeah.
a perfect God-ordained opportunity presents itself.
As far as the principle of context being important, like is this just something that just kind of came out of nowhere, or had you been like recently thinking about this more or like reading stuff about it, or where did that kind of come from? Was it just as simple as just happened to come up that day?
I mean, in this particular, yeah, I mean, personally, I really believe this. I hold it with great conviction that, you know, a word is not inherently evil in and of itself. You know, a word, like it's the intent behind a word, right? And sometimes words are sharp and they're like tools. And if they're very sharp, maybe we should leave them away for the most part,
yeah.
right? But you can conceive of a context where the only way to convey a message is using some of these words. And, you know, I've used the example, like in the movie about Jackie Robinson, the movie 42, there's a really hard scene where they're on the road, they're in another city, and they're playing a team where the coach is just dehumanizing Jackie.
Mm.
He's calling him, you know, every racial slur in the book. And like, think about it. If that's a movie, they're trying to convey what this man went through. If they redacted the words and said N-word, 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 or beep, 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 it would actually be a disservice to his story and what he went through, right? And so
yeah.
in that context, pulling out that sharp tool is actually necessary to portray the correct history. And like, there's all sorts of consequences. I just tweeted about this. I mean, look what happens when we only read the parts of the Constitution or the Bible that we're comfortable with or that we like. There's all sorts of consequences downstream from that. And I mean, one of them is like, our society is forgetting what a boy and a girl is, and that boys are competing. So the truth is at stake here when we alter and hide words, and language shapes your perception about reality. Mm-hmm. And you can actually control somebody's thoughts when you control the language they're allowed to use. And so I see so many consequences downstream, and I hold those principles dearly, and I want these students to be able to think for themselves. And, you know, we don't protect them by banning words. We protect them by helping them actually understand what they mean.
Yeah.
And so all of that just came out in that moment. And I kind of just instinctually felt I had to do that. And I don't care if you disagree with me, but at least think critically about it.
Powerful words.
I'm just trying to think. So, I mean, what has been, I mean, I don't know what the legal recourse, you know, looks like with a situation like this. Does there remain any kind of legal recourse for you, or not really? I mean, what does that look like? Cause I mean, I'm just thinking like, I've heard of a bunch of stories of you've got teachers who maybe not like sexually assault, but like they'll be accused of this and it'll go on, or like, it'll be known that this happened. And like it's known that teachers union is very difficult to fire a teacher, for a teacher to lose their job, at least in some states. So the fact that they were able to so quickly get you out, you know, it's kind of surprising on one level. So, I mean, maybe just answering that question, like what is do you still have any recourse, and what does that look like?
Yeah, we still have some recourse. So the reason I think they wanted to get rid of me is because if they let me teach for one more year, I would have been granted tenure. And it's really hard to get rid of somebody who has tenure.
Got you.
And so I didn't have the same rights to a formal hearing. And now the union still represents me.
Yeah.
I was a non-dues paying member. And I've been transparent about that. But I don't want my money going to some of the causes that these unions donate their money to. But they still have to represent me because they are still the sole bargaining agent on my behalf.
Yeah.
And I had meetings with the union, and all I got was I was getting lectured about how what I did was wrong. I would have never done what you did, and I've been teaching way longer than you have. And like, no meaningful help whatsoever. And I actually have that conversation on audio, and I'm probably going to release it soon. But yeah, there is legal recourse because even though I was not a tenured teacher, there's a case to be made that this is a viewpoint discrimination First Amendment case that falls outside of the teaching policy.
Hmm.
And it's being looked at very closely. I'll say that.
Can I chime in something there?
Do it.
You know, having employed hundreds of people over the years, you have to be aware not only of like, it's okay, you know, Hawaii is an at-will work state. I don't know if Washington is, so you can terminate somebody anytime you want, but it doesn't mean you can discriminate against them. So if I say, I no longer need your services today. And they say, what for? I can say, felt like it, you know, but I can't terminate their services because sexual identity, religious, racism, or anything like that. And so it's an interesting, I'm not sure if Washington's an at-will work state, but, and then even though it's an at-will state, you can terminate somebody anytime, any place, not for any reason though. You can terminate them for no reason, but you cannot terminate them for a bad reason. Does that make sense? So it seems to me that in your case, that, you know, your contract was, it's allowable to let you go because they just don't like the cut of your jib, but not because you bring a viewpoint that is, they don't, you know, that's essentially what the word you said, Jordan, you said it right. I can't remember the word you used. Basically religious discrimination or viewpoint discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. You can get rid of an at-will employee or a non-tenured teacher for no cause, right? You can do that. Mm. But if you let the cat out of the bag and you reveal what the real reason is, and that reason ends up being, hey, you're retaliating against this person because of a First Amendment viewpoint difference, that's where things get a little bit tricky. And no, you're right. You don't have the right to do that, or you're violating the Constitution at that point.
You've done a number of interviews. Like I've seen you on a number of different interviews. Have any of those people, kind of reached out to try to offer more legal help or just to help you think through that kind of stuff? Or I guess who else has been in your corner other than these unions?
Yeah, there's a few. I've had a lot of DMs trying to connect me with this person, with that person. And there's actually a pretty big, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but like the American Freedom Teachers Association, I think. They reached out. They're having a big conference in July, and they have people I'm speaking with.
Okay.
Looking at options. And, but it's also so hard to like connect with people online and virtually. Like, so it's being looked at closely here locally as well.
Yeah.
So I only have a few more minutes, but I'm fascinated by all the different cultural, social, linguistic, and theological just kind of overlapping issues in this conversation. And obviously I think, different people in the moment, right? Where I can just feel the tension of I've said these certain things. I've tried to teach this to these students, this view that ideas and intent matters, and it's not just, there's not just taboo words and certain syllables formed together that create this unforgivable sin, and then you're challenged with your idea, and so then you go for it, right? And I can feel that the challenge of that moment, and it makes sense that you made that decision. I wonder as I think through. So there's a C.R. Wiley has a great book on Tom Bombadil, and he has a whole chapter on words and their connection to magic, and he uses even the linguistic connection of spelling as casting spells, and the role of words and their power. And that they indeed have power, and humans infuse them with power and meaning, and that those words, yes, there's authorial intent, right? The person speaking them. There's also etymological history. There's also like semantic domain, right? How does this word get used in different contexts, in different use cases? And my background is in linguistics and biblical languages, and you read a whole ton about these different issues, and you can't just say, well, this Greek word means these five things, so that's what it means in this context. You're like, no, that is called that's an exegetical fallacy of the totality of the domain that you're transferring into this one use case. And so language is complex. There's theories around speech act and how speech is actually an act. And when God speaks, he creates when he speaks. And so the divine actor is actually doing things as he speaks. Words become reality when spoken by our triune God. And we're little, right, image bearers of this God. And the scriptures talk a lot about blessing and cursing and the power of words. And so I would, and I think this is a whole nother conversation, I'd be interested in engaging in it. I think it's a worthwhile conversation where we can say both there is authorial intent within historical texts that appear in their own historical context. And then you have present day context and the intent of a reader or someone in conversation or an actor on a movie set acting out a historical moment or just a imaginary hypothetical story. But I think words do get lives of their own that get created. And then there's also, again, within speech theory, encoding and decoding. Like if I'm encoding a message to you in one language and you don't know that language, or the word I'm using, it's the Princess Bride meme, you keep using this word, I don't think you know what it means, right? And so I can encode one meaning into the vocalization that I'm giving, but my audience is decoding a different meaning. That's called a failure of communication, right? And so I would say that there's so much burden on communicators to recognize, even as a preacher. So I've, over the years, I've preached hundreds of times, and you go through this long process of, okay, here's my manuscript. Here's what I plan to say. Now, what is my audience going to hear? And is this going to be helpful? And I err on the side of being more confrontational, like, oh, this will get a rise out of people, and I'm gonna say this because I want to leave an impact. I want to be memorable, and then I have those the next week conversations, and I get the emails from congregants and or people at the conference, and they're, what did you mean by that? And I remember saying a particularly vivid image about abortion, and I was really passionate about it. And I used this image and I communicated it, and I believe I told the truth about what abortion actually is. But then having conversations afterwards with women in my congregation, either who work in the medical field or have had abortions or like, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, the Sunday morning large group context was not the context to say what I said. And I did cause harm, and not hypothetical, like you were politically incorrect, so I'm going to have manufactured outrage, which sounds like, I mean, I don't know all the specifics, but that sounds like it's a lot of manufactured outrage. But I actually did cause like some stumbling to listeners and hurt. And I had to process through that, and would I have said it again? And so, that's just me rambling, and I don't feel like I have like a clear, like I don't know enough in a number of situations to say, well, therefore I'm going to come to a conclusion about whether or not a thing should have been said in your context. But man, there are so many elements of truth and questions of meaning and language involved in this debate that I'm glad we're having it, and I'm glad there's a Christian brother trying to be faithful in the midst of it. And by God's grace, probably learning and growing through the process.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, and I agree. The context in which we speak words is really important. And, you know, I've been reading Matthew 12 for the last month, you know, where Jesus is talking about, you know, you will give an account for every careless word you speak. And, you know, I take that very seriously, and I'm not perfect at it. But at the end of the day, I think, like, what is a classroom, right? A classroom should be a place of guided exploration. And if a student needs to understand a word used in context, like, what other place is that lesson going to become come across if it's not in a classroom? And you know, I know there's plenty of other areas where you can gain knowledge, right? But I think the classroom is an appropriate place for that to take place, especially if, you know, I was genuinely trying to serve students, and I made it very clear when and how this word should not be used.
Yeah.
Right. I said it about four times, and there's even students who have done interviews with the press who said, you know, Mr. Mashburn, he was very clear. You don't call people this. You don't use this in a discriminatory way. He was trying to help us understand, you know, what it meant in context, and that you can still engage with something honestly, and you shouldn't feel bad for it, because again, like, understanding is key here. If you read every approved word, but you have no understanding of how we got here, that's fertile ground for the cycle that you're trying to prevent to just perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think rather than having the blind lead the blind, because these kids are going to be talking about it regardless. Are they going to be doing it behind closed doors when they're laughing with their friends and then they end up making jokes about it? Or can they learn about it from a teacher who loves and cares about them and who has more life experience? And so there's a lot at play. And so I agree with everything.
It's kind of like the sex talk with kids. Do you want them to learn about the sex talk from their porn-watching 11-year-old friend? Or do you want to hear it from mom and dad that it's for mommies and daddies and God, it's good and blah, 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 you know? And it's, you know, I have a little beam of light, I think, to throw in here. Like, based on your testimony just now, I feel like your students got the lesson, if that makes sense. and somehow your overseers didn't get the lesson at this point. And I don't know if it was their uplines that, you know, because you had apparently a conversation initially, which was like, hey, don't do that again. And then you have the opportunity to say, okay, that's not okay here. Okay, I won't, you know. And then next thing you know, it's this surprise. So who knows behind the scenes if there's like the bigger upline is like, nah, we're not going to have this guy around. I'm not speculating. I'm just saying it sounds a little like that. And then your students saying, hey, we're so sorry. We didn't know this would happen. Actually, they didn't really do anything wrong. I mean, maybe it was a little bit inappropriate to film it, but they're kids. This is what the adult world is for, is for you as an adult to go back to the other adults and say, okay, tell me what our mission is here and set me some parameters and here's what I was trying to do. And has anyone else come forward saying that I'm racist? You know, has there any other accusations against me? And it seems like that's the adult conversation that should have been happening. And even if it's a reprimand, okay, fine, it's a reprimand. But I think that the by actions, they taught the kids something that's not true. You know, whereas you taught them something that was true, whether or not you stepped over the line. Does that make sense? That's my little ray of sunshine, is it seems like the students got it. And I wonder if any of their families have expressed anything towards you or anything like that.
All the families, besides maybe one, are in my, you know, in my court. They're, especially the families that were represented in that classroom, I've received nothing but support from like 98% of students and families. And I've seen people making comments on Facebook, on like local news articles that, you know, they're critical, but you know, you can't please everybody.
Yeah. And then it's like, woe to you when all men speak well of you. So like there's like, that's a whole nother thing too, is like, you know, it's not, you don't want to be approved of by everybody. There's people who like, who you should want them to disapprove of you because of who they are and because of the things that they, you know, the type of things that they give approval to. I think one of the other things that you mentioned, we don't know, I can't remember what the context was, but you mentioned like we just have a culture, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, we don't know what anything, we don't know what it means to be a boy. We don't know what it means to be a girl. And I would say the same thing goes just language more broadly. We don't know why it exists. And we don't really, like, there's a lot of it that language is just, and it's even just discussed at this at higher educational levels, like language is violence. And, you know, in that, like, basically it's a tool of manipulation. It's a, it's a, it's a weapon, that
only, meanwhile, violence is language.
Yeah. That only
violence exists, is free speech.
Sorry. Yeah. That only exists to basically, you know, further certain ends, in all these things. And it's just like, and then to look at that from a Christian perspective, like to look at and think about language from a Christian perspective, language exists for the same reason that everything exists, which is for the good of people and the glory of God. And so you're sitting there trying to act and trying to serve your students by communicating to them, hey, this is the way that language works. And then you were presented with one example and you use that one example. But again, a lot of it seems like, you know, based on what you're saying, like there is so much politicization. There is, you know, you have these people who potentially in the school board who are, you know, they tell you one thing, don't do this again. And then again, the next day, somebody who's a higher above them, who's afraid of getting in trouble or afraid of looking like they're not harsh enough on somebody who's potentially a racist, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like it's two completely different ways of operating, right? You can operate from like a fear, from like a position of fear and of self-preservation, or you can operate from a perspective of love and of self-sacrifice and of a desire to help, you know, people grow. And so again, to kind of put the negative spin on what Matt was saying, it's very interesting, like what your students are taking away from the school board, which is you make one mistake, you do one thing that we don't like and you're canceled, you're done with. You know, we're going to get rid of you. And so again, it's just very humorous to think about the very purportedly secular Pacific Northwest who's being so puritanical when it comes to language. It's just, you know, it's very interesting. But yeah, I think that this is just something we're going to see more and more as people come to the end. Like there's been so much in the United States, just culturally, where we've like kind of, there's been like parasitic relationship between culture and Christianity. There, like much of our culture has reaped the benefits of being largely Christianized, and they've been like able to kind of do whatever they want to because they're still, you know, they can, there's still like a small enough percentage that it really doesn't affect, and degrade the whole. But I think as we continue to get, you know, critical mass, and a higher percentage of people who, again, for whatever reason, have gotten to the point where they just don't see the value of the Christian faith anymore. And they replace it with other things with other dogmas that aren't in line with reality and that are far more oppressive, when it comes to dealing with people who step out of line. I think you're just going to see this in different levels, different parts of culture. So, I think I'm just super encouraged, you know, by you, just by the way you've handled it. You know, you haven't screamed and freaked out on people and, you know, and you haven't kind of backed down from what you did. I just think it's an encouraging, it's encouraging to other people who are, you know, potentially going to go through this. I do want to ask you this. You did mention you're thankful to have Bitcoin. Again, we have the vast majority of people who listen to this podcast are Bitcoiners, but there might be a couple who find this somehow who are confused as to why you would bring up Bitcoin in this context. Like, what does Bitcoin have to do with you getting fired?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it's cool that, you know, and thank God for Bitcoin podcast where you can talk about Bitcoin. I think I'm thankful that I have some Bitcoin in this circumstance because, man, what if you only had money that just faces continual monetary debasement? And I don't know. I'm thankful for how Bitcoin has shaped my mind over the last 4 years, because for the last 4 years, I've been stacking Bitcoin because of what I believe it to be and the principles and, you know, how it's shaped my view of money. And so it's helped me become a more, cultivate better habits when it comes to money. And so I'm not looking at this situation thinking like, oh my gosh, like what have I been doing the last 4 years? I have $4 in my bank account and I'm not prepared, right? But like, so it's not just Bitcoin as money, but it's Bitcoin as a way of looking at money, a way of saving. And for the last 4 years, you know, praise the Lord that I've been in a position where I've been able to stack some sats every month. And, you know, if God forbid I don't find a job, but like, hey, I have something to live on for you know, a little while. And it's not a money that will bleed its value. It's a money that will increase in value. And, you know, imagine if we were in a place where the cancellation is a little bit further, right? Where the regime is a little bit more oppressive, and they don't just cancel your job or terminate your job. They actually fine you money, or they put you in prison, or they seize your assets. Like, I'm thankful the United States hasn't gotten to that point yet, but man, we're not guaranteed that we couldn't go down a road like that, but to have a money that is, it's really hard to confiscate. And so, I just feel freedom. Like, it's just another layer of freedom. Like, now that we're on this podcast, I can talk about things that I wouldn't have normally been able to talk about. And Bitcoin allows you to, you know, it gives you more freedom. And so it's a whole mindset, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ash. You have a little less time.
Yeah. Did you guys see the SCOTUS decision about against that the school board related to gender curriculum stuff?
I don't know.
So headlines only.
Yeah. So the Al Mohler, his briefing, I think from today or yesterday, went over it. Super helpful. But basically, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a parent who wanted advance notice to take their children out of specifically LGBTQ like gender curriculums, and it was literally like drag queen story hour type of things, and the school board or the school had said, hey, we don't need to give you advance notice. What you drop off your kids, there are responsibility and we have authority to teach them what we think we need to teach them, so sorry. And so the majority decision that Amy Coney Barrett wrote was essentially no, parents have this prerogative and schools need to notify them. But what was really telling, and Mohler brought this out, is the dissenting decision. So the minority liberal justices, one of the lines in their opinion was essentially, if you allow this to happen and you give parents authority to choose what the state's allowed to teach them, you put the very structure of public education at risk, right? If you put authority in the hands of the parents and not in the state, then all of state education is at risk and will crumble and fall apart. Amen. Which I found what an insight into what this is actually really about.
Yeah.
Right? Is it the state's job to indoctrinate and create little perfect factory workers and men to follow the state governing kind of regime? Or are we trying to create sovereign families that live under the authority of God, that are citizens of a free republic and contribute to that republic and need an education in the arts and the sciences so as to be free and moral individuals, right? And it's an entirely different view of who has authority and what education even is. But I mean, the Northwest is kind of, we're like the testing ground of this very kind of late stage democracy slash like Marxist idea that the state owns and should have full prerogative on the teaching of the next generation, because they're not having kids themselves. And so they need the mechanism to indoctrinate the next generation, right? Us Christian families, we have kids and we teach our kids. If you're in this other secular ideological viewpoint, all you have is the state education system. And so they're going to fight tooth and nail for that. And I think, I mean, in your experience, that's probably what a lot of this is about.
I think the question that's happening here with what happened with you, Matthew, is not even whether you did the exactly perfect thing. It's about, is this a conversation that can be had, or is it not a conversation that can be had? Because it's not even about the specific, because in a lot of ways, like what Ash was saying earlier, you weren't even trying, you're not like the N-word guy, and you're not like the, you were actually having a moment with the students, and you were responding to a challenge that they issued you, like, will you stand up for what you just said? And, you know, you could have chosen to say, I prefer not to say it out loud or whatever, but you chose this path, but that's not even the point. The point is this a conversation? And if it isn't a conversation, then they learn about that word through gangster rap, or they learn about that word through whatever is taught in the schools. And what they find out is that what they're going to probably end up learning is so-and-so is a racist because they have 10 employees and none of them are brown skinned. And it's like, well, what's the demographic of where they, you know, do their business, or what's the demographic of, or how does their hiring process? Are they actually a racist? And you need to be exposed in a positive way, let's just say in a real learning way, to actual racism, so that you don't say to what actual racism looks like, is what I mean. And that's through great literature, as well as through history and stuff like that. And if they understand that, as they grow into adults, they also come to understand, okay, this is the real thing. This doesn't quite qualify. Now, what's the great danger in that for people as they grow up is they equate, you know, real victims of racism who we should all care about, who are actually excluded, who are actually even lynched in history and things like that. And they equate that to someone who feels slightly uncomfortable because they have to code switch in an environment at work or at school or whatever. And those two things are not the same. Those two things are not the same at all. And now they miss out on that experience of saying, I'm going to be exposed in a helpful way to understanding, like Huckleberry Finn or whatever, To Kill a Mockingbird. And these authors were not writing because they were racists, you know? And again, as Ash pointed out, this could be like five conversations, not just one, but but if you don't learn it that way, you're gonna learn it the other way, and your Overton window or whatever, maybe that's the wrong term, but you know, your blinds start getting closer and closer and closer, and you can't even understand what people are talking about, and you don't understand the degrees.
Yeah. I think
you go ahead.
I think you're exactly right. I think it is an Overton window issue. And these kids, these students, they need to have the skill to differentiate, like you're saying, without falling into an emotional collapse and falling into some hysteria. Like, you see a lot of 20-year-olds who, these social justice warrior types, who they go into complete hysteria, and their mental faculties are not actually governing their body. It's actually something more akin to like animals. So like, you're actually abandoning what it is to be human, to exercise rationality, nuance, and reason. Like, your reason is completely abandoned. And do we want students to graduate from high school and they're going to not have that skill to differentiate between those two things?
Yeah, we didn't even get into just the hypocrisy of, you've got songs by Cardi B and songs by all of these artists who repeatedly, I guarantee you, if you go to this public school, you're going to find hundreds of examples, thousands of examples over the course of the year of people, of like these songs being played with this exact word repeated over and over again. And again, there's much less pushback, I would be willing to wager a good amount of Bitcoin, that there's not anywhere near the same pushback against these things as there is against, you know, you reading a piece of classic literature. So again, just the intellectual dishonesty is it just boggles the mind. But again, it shouldn't surprise us. And so again, that's why we can, and again, I think this is a big part of what I'm taking away from you, just hearing you talk is, you know, there's a confidence in the Lord and not this, again, to what you just were describing, not freaking out and flying off the handle and screaming at these people. Like I haven't seen any of that. And so again, it's just testifying that you know, you have confidence in an authority that is above all of these other authorities, who sees and knows and will, you know, give recompense, to you, and handle these things. And so you don't need to take these matters into your own hands, in you know, God dishonoring ways. So I think, yeah, you're illustrating the superiority of the God that you serve compared to the God that they serve. Let's see, we've been going for almost an hour. Ashwa, I know you got to run here, so I'll give you, if you have any other last questions, and Matt, if you have any other questions.
No, man, I really appreciate this, and I'll be praying that God gives you grace. I know things like this, when all of a sudden your life decisions are posted on national media. Yep. We don't usually sign up for that type of experience. and everyone, of course, has opinions about it. And so I just, yeah, pray that God gives you grace in the midst of that, and that the any platform that he gives you would be used for his glory.
Thank you.
Amen. And is there ways people are supporting, like, are you guys doing any fundraising or thinking?
Yeah. Is there like a GoSendMe or something, or GoFundMe?
Yeah. So, well, thank you for the prayers. That's really most important. There is a Give, Send, Go that's is out there if people want to support me financially as I navigate this transition. And so that's givesendgo.com/Mastronardi. If you just type in my last name, givesendgo.com, Mastronardi. And, you know, you can follow the story. You know, if you want to follow me on X, I'll be posting updates. I'm looking at announcing something pretty soon that is kind of big news. And I also have a podcast myself, which is called The Great Reassessment. And yeah, so there's my family and the picture of the Give, Send, Go. Yeah, there we are. That's my boy's a little bigger now. That was about 5 months ago.
Oh, a beautiful family, man.
Oh. Thank you. And so, yeah, I never expected, but certainly appreciated. So thank you to anybody who donates. And yeah, I think we just need to be courageous during this time. Like,
yeah,
we are so deprived of courage in our society. There's, you know, the last 10 years, I don't know how many people you can think of, like, who have, I mean, there's plenty of people displaying courage, but just like it's rare, you know? And that's what I'm trying to do to the best of my ability.
Yeah, to me, the 2016, I think it was 2016 Jordan Peterson moment was an example where you know, maybe he needs to take a break and come to Hawaii now for a little while, but back that what the way he answered about the transgender issue was so thoughtful, unbelievably thoughtful, unbelievably talking about the same things as words. How do you use words? And in his case, he was actually being forced to say words rather than to not say words. And I see this as an echo of that. And I just wonder, and I hope that this type of behavior is the light is shown on it to where the students see it, to where the public sees it. This idea that power is everything. They have the power to get rid of you, and they utilize the power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their story, period. You know? And by the way, that's the story of the left. Everything is power. If we don't have power, we need to take it from people so that we have the power. And in the scripture, in the God's way of looking at things, power is one thing. And you're responsible for your power. And then there's, are you living righteously? And then there's justice. And then there's all these other factors that you can put into a matrix and say, if I want to walk with God, I put all these things together. And if they had cared about the students learning, it wouldn't have gone this way. And I thought when you said courage, that was the word that kept coming up in my mind. And when I'm working with someone as a partner or with my own children or with anyone I'm teaching in church or with my employees, I'm like looking for people who've got that spark. And when it's so rare, it's rare in adults. And I want to foster that courage. And I've had people who I disagree with or who challenge me. And I'm like, yes, bring it, give it to me, because most people are sleepwalking. Does that make sense? And so I would love to see my children or anyone else I have the opportunity to influence become courageous in their life, because there's so few. And there's a little metric I've been using on myself like the last year or so, you know, would 15-year-old Matt and would 95-year-old Matt be happy with the decision I made in my middle age?
Mm.
Because middle age is the age of you got to provide for your family. You've got to be worried about finances. You got to be worried about all these things. And the tendency towards sin, I think, in middle age, and I'm stealing this from, what's that guy's name? The abolitionist, actually. What's the abolitionist guy that Amazing Grace?
Wilberforce.
No. Newton.
Yeah, Wilberforce. I'm stealing it from his book. He talks about this. Like we face different sins in different ages of life. And middle age, the sin is fear of provision.
Mm.
You know, and so I'm always asking myself, am I making decisions just based on what I perceive will do well for me and my family and provide? Mm. Or going back to my little mantra or whatever, is my teenage self proud of the decision I made because it was made with conviction and courage? And is my 95-year-old self looking back proud that I made that decision, not out of fear? And it seems to me that, you're setting an example in that, and hopefully it looks like the kids see that. Hopefully the public sees that, and however long your little moment is where people are looking at you, that you're just what Osh said, that you're using that to the glory of God. And I say words, you know, responding a little to Osh, again, this is another 2-hour conversation, but just a little snippet is like, words are made by great literature. They don't have meanings on their own, you know? And even Christians get wrong, you know, well, what does agape mean? Well, agape doesn't actually even mean one thing. It depends on if you're reading John or if you're reading Peter or whatever. Yeah. And you need to sit under the author. You need to sit under the teacher and say, Peter, what are you trying to say? Jesus, what are you trying to say? John, what are you trying to say? And I had a very similar situation with someone I'm trying to partner with right now in business, where we were hashing it out about the Christian faith, and yesterday, believe it or not, and you know, we have to say, I believe the Christian, the right Christian way to try to live is to say, in most things, I don't cause a hassle. In most things, I'm soft. I'm listening. I'm ready to learn myself, to the point where you should be surprised when I stiffen my spine and say, I won't budge an inch. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if you're a Christian and you love rage or you love controversy, Paul tells Timothy, don't be that guy. False teachers love controversy. Mm. You need to be gentle with your opponents, gentle on everything. Who knows, God may perhaps lead them to a knowledge of the truth. Mm. And so I love to see believers where you are soft, you are, you listen more than you preach, I guess. And therefore, it's a little bit like, why did he stand up for that one thing?
Mm.
Because that's not the kind of life he lives. And does that make sense? And so I think, based on my short knowledge of your situation, that's something you're displaying. And I encourage other Christians to be the same way. Be soft and surprise people when there's something you won't budge an inch on.
It's like the saying that the stars shine bright, like the stars are there 24/7, but they shine more brightly at night because of the contrast. And so I think that, you know, like that is what God is looking for, right? He wants there to be contrast so that when there is, you know, in these occasional times where we are, you know, face like flint facing towards Jerusalem, like we're not turning, we're not Job's wifing, like we're just like, we're not budging. That should provide some good, you know, contrast to the rest of how we're living. I think that, and again, that will, it'll accomplish the work that God intends it to have. Matthew, really appreciate you, brother. Oh, do you want to add one more thing? Go for it.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you to Matt, because I really, you know, it's in all of you guys, it's been good for my soul just to like, mm-hmm. like, these are all the things I love, right? Visas, you know, Bitcoin, and just truth, really.
Yeah.
And so thank you, Matt, for what you were saying. And one thing that just kind of popped in my head as we were just finishing up about courage is, you know, a lot of people have read John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress.
Mm.
And he has a lesser known allegory that he wrote, which is called The Holy War.
Mm.
And not a lot of people know about it, but it's called The Holy War, The Battle for Man's Soul. And there's a town called Man's Soul, and it's protected, and there's a gate around it. And it comes under attack. And each person, you know, how in John Bunyan, he gives everybody like the name of the trait they represent, kind of.
Yeah.
And the first person that the enemy attacks from outside the walls, his name was Courage.
Hmm.
And I just think that that's really telling, because courage is the virtue upon which all other virtues rest. It's like,
yeah,
it's like that Jenga block on the very bottom. Like, you pull out courage, it's everything else comes tumbling down with it.
Mm.
And I think we're in a time where, like, we just need more of that. And I hope my students who I'm really proud of, I could not be more proud of them. And I want to give them credit for, you know, starting the petition, making public comments at the school board meeting, and addressing people who are older than them and speaking the truth. And it's just, yeah, that's just kind of something that was, I was thinking about as right as you finished speaking. And yeah, courage. So it's really good that Christians not budge on some of these important things.
Yeah, man. Amen. I just want to thank you, Matt, for spending the time with us. And again, we'll be praying for you and thinking of you and your family here in the days and weeks to come. To close, I want to just remind everybody, we have one thing going on here, and actually it's the topic of courage is a very central part of what we have going on in the Orange Umbrella Kickstarter. This is the Orange Umbrella Man, who's one of our characters. He embodies a lot of what Matt embodies and a lot of what we've described here. And so this is a kid's book that myself and one of my other friends named JD wrote over the course of 2 years. It's being illustrated as we speak. We're getting close to having it done. And we are over the 80% mark in terms of getting this thing funded. So we've got about 2 weeks left. If you guys want to help bring a Bitcoin kids book into the world, we don't use the word Bitcoin. We only kind of infer it. So again, it's a good gift to give to your friends and their kids, maybe who don't care about Bitcoin at this point. We also have, if you're a Geyser campaign, if you're interested in funding in Bitcoin. So again, your kids need courage. They need to see it. They need to see you carry it out. And so reading about it is one way to do that. So, so go grab your copy or copies. We have like some, you know, 10 copy bundles and stuff like that for people who want to give them away as gifts and stuff. So, Matthew, I'd love to shoot one your way. So, we'll get the address offline. I'd love to give one to you and your kids. So again, thank you for joining us for another episode of To the Unknown Pod, and we'll be back on Thursday with the Mountain Presbies. Looking forward to that. We got a bunch to talk to them about, so we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
God bless.